The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Music Weekly. I'm Alexis Petridis. Coming up on the show, we'll be talking to Speech de Bell about her new record, Last Year's Riot, and her new cookery show. We'll be hearing from the winner and some of the judges of the Guardian's first album award, and as usual, a singles club as well. That's all on Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm thrilled, thrilled beyond measure to have in the studio with me, Kieran Yates.
Hello.
How you doing? You're all right?
Fine, thank you.
Excellent. Yeah. And a newcomer to the Guardian Music Weekly pod, Charlotte Richardson Andrews.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in. What have you been up to, Charlotte? Tell us something exciting that you've done in the last 7 days.
Oh, I saw Wild Flag about a week ago.
Wow, how were they?
Amazing.
Excellent.
Yes.
That's good. That's good. Kieran, have you seen anybody good in the last week?
Nope. Been in my room writing.
Have you?
Yes.
Good. I'm pleased to hear it. That's assiduous.
Yes.
And that's what young people should be doing. That's a credit to you and to everyone else. I haven't done anything of interest at all. Speech de Bell won the Mercury Prize in 2009 for her debut album Speech Therapy, then promptly vanished as if the victim of a sort of the Chilean secret police or something. She just seemed to fall off the face of the planet. But she's back with a new album, Freedom of Speech. Kieran, you went and spoke to her, you had a chat with her.
Yep, I did. She was really good. It was nice to hear some stuff from the new album, and yeah, I've listened to her and talked about some tracks.
And she's still with her label.
She is.
Which is amazing.
They had a bit of a falling out, quite a public falling out,
yeah,
didn't they? But yeah, back on track, it seems.
Excellent, excellent. Did you discuss this?
Yes, very briefly.
So you started out, I guess, by asking her about her new album, yes?
Yes.
Let's have a listen.
I think hopefully it's an evolution of the first album. I've got better in crafting my skill. I'm still doing that. I'm better at putting songs together and structuring songs, and the concepts are broader. It's a lot more outward looking. Hopefully it's a good progression. You know, there's quite a few of those songs I wrote when I was like 19, so it's nearly like 10 years later. And you know, the difference between 19 and coming on 30 is at 19 you have a lot of questions. Quite teenage angst, you're quite sort of frustrated. And then when, you know, you're coming on 30, you laugh at a lot of things. Do you know what I mean? The same things that you'd be frustrated about, the same things you just seem to find hilarious for some reason. And the fact that you don't know the answer to a lot of the questions you have is what makes it fun and interesting.
You've chilled out a bit.
Yeah.
In old age.
Yeah.
Sort of old age.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know, I'm past, not midlife, quarter life, I'm past there. I'm closer to midlife now.
So tell me a little bit about, obviously there's a lot reported about a delicate relationship with your label after your first album and after winning the Mercury. Is that kind of the frustrations that you're talking about that you felt when you were younger?
Nah, do you know what? I was in a good place generally at that time. I was having a lot of fun. It's just that I really wasn't prepared for success. You know, it's always been something that I wanted, but I was absolutely not prepared for success in any type of way. And I think that having to deal with it was difficult. It just made relationships a little bit tense and a little bit strained. But, you know, at the end of it, everybody wants the same thing. Do you know what I mean? Everybody just wants to, like, just make good music and put out good music.
I mean, really, it was only, a few years ago that Speech Therapy came out, but so much has happened in terms of the urban landscape in Britain.
Yes.
You know, it seems like completely different in terms of its kind of commercial pop success, really.
Right.
So do you feel like you're coming into something that's completely different, or did you not see this happening? Or
no, definitely. I think it's always like that. I remember a time when Gabrielle was all over the charts.
I missed that eye patch.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? She had some tunes. It comes and goes. Different moods become really popular any particular time, and definitely right now. I hate saying urban. I just feel like I never want to say that. Do you know what I mean? I feel like it's a naughty word. But I think I'm a bit more understanding of urban now, though.
But I mean, with songs like Blaze Up a Fire, those are really talking quite directly about an urban landscape. You know, they're talking about the city. They're talking about a response to, you know, a kind of a real heated frustration within the city. So I suppose that that's quite inherently urban.
Yeah, I mean, Blaze was the first song that me and Quez did. We did that song on a sort of let's go in the studio together and see if we work. That, and it was the initial, let's see if we even like to be in each other's company enough. And it was the first track that we'd done, and then we decided we're not going to use it. And my A&R was like, what about that song? And we went back to it. At that time, it was about when, shortly after the sort of North African uprising, there was like Egypt and there was Tunisia. And it was around about that time, and I think that's really what was heavily, we were heavily influenced by. Oh yeah, there were the UD student riots in London as well. And Rodney was in the studio, Roots Manoeuvre was in the studio. I think he was doing some recording in there, in the same building, but a different studio, and he came in and was like, let me get on something. You know, that's how he sounds, isn't it? Yeah. let me jump on something. So, all right. And yeah, that's how the song came about. When the thing with the riots and the looting happened, I just wanted to put it out. I was thought that it would be totally, slightly inappropriate, provocative, and a way that some people were looking at the situation and still do look at the situation.
Do you see yourself as a social commentator of sorts then?
Oh yeah, definitely. I come from a place of being a social commentator. I come from a place of not having the option not to be a social commentator. We're social commentators in the hairdressers. We're social commentators on a Sunday when we're cooking dinner and we've got some family over. When you're younger and you're in the park and you're sitting on the wall chilling at 10 p.m. Do you know what I mean? That's the place I come from. We are all social commentators because we're affected so much by our environment that we analyse it and end up probably being far better commentators than any kind of politician I've ever met, other than my politician, Shuka Inama, who's my man. He's the man. He should be Prime Minister.
Do you feel like, because of where UK British music is now, it's a lot easier for women to break through, or do you think there's still a long way to go?
It's a very difficult question to answer because I don't know it any other way than what I've experienced. And I've done okay, so therefore I can't put my sex down to as in terms of stopping me from doing anything, because I've got further than I ever expected to already. Do you know what I mean? So I don't feel like there's anything in particular that is like that's holding me back, or I could have got further. Like, I'm doing okay, and I'm going to continue to try and get even further.
So what's next? What are you going on? I know you were talking about a cooking show.
Yeah.
Potentially being are you going to be the Nigella of the urban music scene speech?
Yeah, I think so, because I'm really into cooking.
Nigelloff Lawson.
I don't know how to make jollof rice, but it's really good. It would be really good if I did know how to make jollof rice. It would be so good.
So what's your plans to do a YouTube video?
Yeah, I'm just going to do YouTube, just out of fun, just because I really like to do it. And I don't know if I should say this, but I'm just a really good cook. I don't know how else to say that. How else do you say that? How do you say that humbly? And I really enjoy it. And so I'm going to do a little YouTube cooking show.
Speech to Bella. Her new record, Freedom of Speech, out on Monday, I believe, on Big Data. Charlotte, are you a Speech to Bella fan?
I think she's a very good lyricist.
Yes.
That's a no.
Oh,
you sound quite equivocal about it. What are the drawbacks to her music, do you think?
I think she has an unusual voice, mm-hmm. Which it always jars a little bit for me.
Yeah.
But I do like the beats on her new album, mm-hmm. which I think were done by Quez.
Yep.
Who's obviously amazing.
Yeah, really exciting producer. Loads of interesting. It sounds really interesting.
Were you surprised, Kieran, that Speech Therapy didn't take off as an album? Because I sort of was. I know it's now very fashionable, but it's the thing to say is like, well, of course, it was a ridiculous thing to pick as the Mercury Prize. But I remember thinking at the time, listening to it, and thinking, actually, this is the kind of record that, you know, the bloke who lives down my street that buys two albums a year and has just come up to me, God, have you heard this band Fleet Foxes? They're amazing. If he actually heard this, he'd probably really like it. And yet, nobody did. Were you sort of surprised by that?
Yeah, I was. I think it was a really great album. But then, you know, when you think back to that win, I think that, you know, the climate was completely different. It was coming out in a really different climate. And one of the things that we discussed was, you know, it's been a relatively short time. I think it's 3 years or so. But really, especially kind of the urban landscape has completely changed, you know, especially kind of in mainstream and commercial pop and the way that we consume and the way that we kind of hear it. It's really, really different. So I think it just kind of reflected the time, maybe.
What do you think she has to offer that's unique as an MC?
I don't know. I think especially like we were discussing kind of sonically, the fact that she has Quez on there, it sounds a lot more interesting than a lot of the, especially with female kind of artists at the moment in the urban scene particularly. I think it sounds a little bit more interesting than other things that are happening. So, okay. Yeah, give it a listen.
Excellent, excellent. That sounds good. Okay, we shall move on. I suppose we should mention again the album Freedom of Speech out on Monday on Big Dada. Great label, Big Dada. Anyway, time now for Singles Club. Kieran, your choice.
Waste all your time writing love songs, but you don't love me,
love me.
All too familiar when it feels wrong, I think you're just lonely.
That's Leanne LaHavis with Forget, the 2-inch punch mix. Kieran, I really like that. You brought that in.
Yep.
You know, I'll be honest with you. Some of the stuff that you bring in, right, on here basically sounds like a fight in a chip shop in Hackney, right? It just sounds all kicking off, right? And then other stuff you bring in is absolutely amazing. And this, I think, falls firmly into the latter category.
Good to hear.
Tell me about Leanne LaHavis. Tell me about 2-inch punch.
Well, this is a remix by 2-inch Punch, who is a London-based artist and producer, real name Ben Ash. And he does a lot of this kind of, these really interesting, almost soulful electronica, maybe a little bit jazz-infused type beats, which I really like at the moment. I'm listening to quite a lot of. And 2-inch Punch is like certainly at the top of his game, in my opinion. He did a really interesting remix of a metronomy tune, and he's done some stuff with Wiz Khalifa.
Okay, so it's quite widespread. What the kind of things he remixed.
Is that good? And so this is a Leanne LaHavis remix, obviously. I don't know if you don't know much about her. She did kind of, I think she was on the BBC Sound of 2012 list. She sounds a little bit like kind of Andrea Triana, sort of those kind of soulful acoustic vocals. It's quite nice, but I think it really needed a little
injection. Is it kind of a lot more straightforward than this?
I would say so. It's perhaps a little bit more, maybe even whimsical, kind of sweet sounding.
If you had to describe her normal sound in a generic term, what is it? Neo soul? Is it?
I would say so. It would have really benefited. When I first heard her, actually, I thought this would really benefit from something a little bit more bassy and a little bit more hard. And I think this is perfect for it.
Because that's great.
It's not so hard, but it.
No, but it's got a really weird kind of futuristic thing to it. And really I think that's, a million times more worthwhile than just making a record that sounds like, you know what I mean, a soul record from the 70s. Charlotte, do you like it?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I listened to the live original version of Leanne's song just before I left the house, and I think she has an amazing voice, but I think he's 2-inch Punch has injected some really awesome things into that.
Yeah, he's definitely done something good with it, kind of weird things with time stretching and auto-tune definitely. And using those things in a very, very creative way.
I think, hard to dance to, but yeah.
But, you don't have to dance to everything. So again, this is your youth showing through. Isn't it? You get to my age, darling, you're just glad of something that you can, put your feet up to, frankly. Where can we find this?
Well, he has an EP coming out in May on PMR, so you should,
But this particular remix?
Oh, this remix. Well, I found this on SoundCloud, so have a look out
for
it.
So it's sort of around and about on the internet. About.
If you know, Alexis,
Well, yeah, but I don't. That's the problem, isn't it? That's the story of my life. If you know, and I don't.
So just type it into SoundCloud and find it from there.
Whatever. Okay, we'll move on to Charlotte's choice.
There must be someone above. So you come on, Brittany. You got to come on now. You got to hold on. Yeah, you got to hold on.
Alabama Shakes there. Hold on. Charlotte, that's your choice. Tell us a little bit about Alabama Shakes.
They're from Athens, Georgia.
Where R.E.M. came from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. You're just basically humouring me by saying that. But anyway, carry on.
They're on Rough Trade. Hold On is their first single. And their debut album, Boys and Girls, is out in April. And they do this really kind of direct fusion of rock and blues and gospel mm-hmm. and R&B.
The singer, who's a lady?
Yes.
Sounds a bit like Jack White. Do you get that Jack White-ishness?
I actually got Millie Jackson.
Very similar?
Yes. Those big, dirty kind of wails. Very...
Yeah, absolutely. No, I do get what you mean. Kieran?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
So what else is next? Come on.
No, yeah, I thought it was all right. I mean, when
I've heard of Millie Jackson. Have you heard of Millie Jackson?
No. Sorry.
Do your homework. You don't really like Millie Jackson. She's amazing.
Really?
Yeah, she's like really filthy. How would you describe it? She was sort of like just...
Well,
dirty.
Yeah, dirty.
Oh. 70s soul diva, yeah. But really... She had an amazing album. The album's called Back to the Shit.
Oh.
And the cover of the album is Millie Jackson sat on the lav. It's a brilliant.
Brilliant, yes.
So, yeah, no, she is absolutely...
Send me some stuff.
Yeah, no, totally.
Peaches
totally.
Used to be in a band called The Shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, there you go. Okay. What about Alabama Shakes?
Yes, it's... I was discussing with Charlotte earlier, I was saying this is completely nothing that I would really find for myself or listen to, but, yeah, I quite liked it. It sounded a little bit like... that band Cold War Kids from a few years ago to me when I first heard it.
I can see a bit of that in
yeah,
there.
Which, yeah, I thought it was okay.
Excellent. Yeah, I liked it too. I wonder if the nature of the lady's voice might grate on me after a while. There's something about that. Because I keep thinking of Jack White, but I mean, that's just me. But I bet they're really good live. The single is out now?
Yes.
On Rough Trade?
It's out digitally now, and I think it's getting an official physical release via Jack White's record label.
You see?
So.
You see? Wheels within wheels. It all comes around. Yeah, it's the sort of thing I can imagine Jack White listening to with a massive erection. that's great. No, I really like that. Alabama Shakes, hold on. Time now for my choice. That's Friend Crush, the Leo Zero remix. Leo Zero was on the pod a while back, you might remember, talking about the art of the disco re-edit. I really like that. I think, I like Friends as well. I chose their previous single for Singles Club before. But what I like about that is, essentially, it's a filtered disco house track. Something the world has not really wanted for over the last decade is filtered disco house. However, I think what he's done there is absolutely brilliant. He's actually constructed a whole... other song around the song. It's not just a loop that he's stuck in. You know, he's a man with obviously an innate understanding of what disco is about. Disco is probably my favourite music in the entire world. And he really, really understands it. And what he gets, which is actually quite a difficult thing to do, I think, if you're remixing a track rather than creating a disco record of your own, is all the best disco has an underlying sense of melancholy about it. There's something incredibly euphoric and camp and outlandish about disco. It's huge string arrangements. But a lot of it, the best of it, you find there's a weird sort of tug of melancholy at the centre, and that's got that on this track. I think there's something about, which doesn't really exist on the original version at all. I think it's a really good example of somebody recontextualising an indie record and making a sort of just a brilliant disco track out of it. So well done, Leo Zero. I'm going to throw this open to the floor. Kieran.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really, really liked about it. I mean, I think when I heard it, I thought, oh, this is, you know, it's brilliant, and it's definitely the kind of thing that I would like love to dance to and love to hear in a club. But yeah, as you say, there is this kind of inherent sense of sadness about it. There is a sense of kind of dancing to it in the club, but also being on the side and watching, yeah, you know, other cool people, and, you know, this kind of yearning to, you know, that sort of Robin, I'm in the corner watching you kiss her, you know,
yeah,
that beautiful,
absolutely,
great thing that, you know, you're dancing and it sounds great. And yeah, there is a sense of euphoria, but also a real kind of, yeah, as you say, melancholy about
it. I think I always think that it's to do with this sort of acknowledgement that moment of dance floor euphoria, it's been quite deep for me, for once. It is a transient thing. You might feel amazing.
You do crash, don't you?
Yeah, you're going to crash eventually, and you get a lot of it there's some really explicit examples of it. I mean, there's a brilliant record by Donna Summer called "Working the Midnight Shift." It's just amazing, sort of electronic disco track, where it's sung from the point of view of a prostitute who's standing at the side trying to sort of pick up a bloke to go home, watching people dancing on a thing. And it's just like the most heartbreaking kind of thing. You could, it's brilliant. And you get a lot of that in disco, and he's got it there. Charlotte.
Well, disco is definitely not my area of expertise at all. But I first heard the original version of the Friends song in February last year.
Really? How come so long ago?
I'm not sure. It was just bouncing around the blogs, I think. But I think the original is, there's a real kind of like sense of, you can feel the crush, you know, there's a big kind of crush. And I think it's obviously about that kind of blur between the friends and something else and being a bit confused about that feeling. And I think in Mr. Zero's remix of it, I think he brings that onto the dance floor, that kind of feeling of that blurred kind of emotional feeling onto the dance floor.
They're quite hotly tipped at the moment, Friends, aren't they?
Yes, they're also on the BBC Sound of...
Oh, great.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think they're going to do... I mean, they seem to me kind of like a... I do like them, but it seems to me kind of a little bit of an arty Brooklyn... You know what I mean? It's a bit of a tough sell. They should get him to remix everything, basically, and become like a sort of proper disco act. Anyway, there you go. I found that on SoundCloud. You see, I do know how to use it. Patronising me. that's on SoundCloud. You can actually download it. It's free, I believe. So if you like that, go out and get it. Next up, the Guardian First Album Award, our prize for the best British debut of last year. Fighting off stiff competition from the likes of The Vaccines, Anna Calvi, Subtract and James Blake. This year it was Rusty, of all people, who walked away with the honours for his album Glass Swords. I was on the judging panel and I quizzed our fellow judges, Derwin from Gold Panda, who were last year's winners, or was last year's winner, and Nicky Wire of the Manic Street Preachers, who lobbied so hard for Woo Life to win. Woo Life is... I don't particularly like Woo Life's album, and by the end of him talking, he's a very persuasive man, I was like, this sounds amazing, this record.
No.
It's nothing like the actual record I heard. He was going, oh, you know, it just sounds like... To me, it's like listening to Lenin give a speech. It's like, wow, you know, it sounds brilliant. Anyway, we'll be talking to Derwin and Nicky Wire in a moment. But first, let's hear from Rusty himself.
It's a great honour to win the first album award from probably the most respected newspaper in the UK. So it's amazing. I didn't expect to get the critical acclaim that it got. I really expected the album to get quite slated because it was really quite a sort of personal statement, and I've got quite a lot of quite bad taste stuff and that a lot of people would find really sort of cheesy. Like happy hardcore and trance and soft rock, a lot of stuff that people tend to say is bad taste or not cool. It's all mainly done on computer, apart from like a microphone and a few. There's some little bits of percussion and guitar and stuff and. But yeah, mainly all done inside computer. I guess I've been working on it for maybe 2 or 3 years, so a lot of hours.
Well, basically, the first album award for 2011 came down to three records, and they were the album by Woo Life, KTB and Rusty, three very different records. Nick, you were lobbying hard for Woo Life.
I was a deep advocate, and more because perhaps it's not the best album in terms of just purely the songs, but the whole idea and the concept of the band and the artwork, and especially the lyrics, the titles, heavy pop, and everything about them I really like, and I want it to be great. And it sounds like a debut album because it's not quite getting there. It's not like... It's very rare you get the perfectly formed sort of Nevermind the Bollocks, you know, classic first album. And that's where I see him in Woo Life, someone who's a band who's just on the cusp of greatness. Mm-hmm. And perhaps I had to give in that it wasn't
musically.
Musically the best.
Mm-hmm. But you think that the kind of that they've sort of presented themselves well, and the sort of the stuff that surrounds it is sort of good.
I think it's really important that, you know, music was never just about music for me growing up. It was about all the other attributes that go with it, mm-hmm. you know, and whether that is slogans or manifestos or just the way you present yourself artistically, image-wise, it's something I've, you know, I always fall for.
It's something you did as a band a lot, and people don't do very much these days, isn't it? I mean, it's having a sort of manifesto or whatever, or
yes.
thinking.
you know, it is an imaginable change from when we started. And on our debut album, Generation Terrorist, you know, it's trying way too hard to be what it quite can't get to. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like the naivety and the ambition of that. And that's mm-hmm. what I saw in Woo Life was the opposite end, something like Subtract, which I really like. And I like the image of that because it's no personality, no image, you mm-hmm. know, but at least it's thought about as well. So mm-hmm. surprised myself. There was a lot of records on you that I actually enjoyed.
There was a lot, as an electronic producer, you were sort of impressed by the Rusty album, weren't you?
Yeah, I was really impressed. Sonically, it just sounds great. It sounds loud and big and bold. And I think a lot of the sounds on it were not typical sounds that maybe an electronic producer or, you know, musician would choose, because he'd want to impress people with these amazing sounds.
Explain this, because this is kind of an interesting point that I was completely unaware of. You said that you thought the Rusty album was using a lot of kind of sort of preset sounds or slightly naff sounds or synthesizers.
Yeah, maybe naff, and I guess that was the point of it, actually. I guess a lot of people would have skipped using those sounds for their own music, thinking, oh, that's so cheesy, it's just a preset off this machine. Especially, like, there's a very slap bass kind of digital.
Seinfeld bass, yeah. Genius.
Yeah, and until you hear him do it, it sounds ridiculous, but mm-hmm. when you actually hear it on the record, it sounds great. I think if he's done this on himself, which it seems he has, and he's got a lot of layers of sound in there and a lot of things going on at once, and to make them all clear and sound great as well is extremely clever.
But I mean, we should be clear, but this is not What Hi-Fi magazine, and we're rewarding this album above and beyond the fact that, if you ever read the album reviews in What Hi-Fi, they're amazing, because it's like really tests out the bass frequencies.
Yeah. As I mentioned, it kind of did a few things which are alien to me. It kind of makes you feel happy, which I don't really want from a record. It makes you want to dance, which I don't. Or drugs or drink or whatever, you know. It's kind of euphoric, which I don't usually like, mm-hmm. but I was just impressed. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's quite a technical feat.
Yeah,
how he's layered everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the other record that nearly made it was Katie B.
Yeah,
which is very different. I mean, I think without wishing to blow the trumpet of this particular award thing, these are three very, very different records we're talking about. You know, what about? I mean, were you both fans of the Katie B. record? What about that appealed to you?
Yeah, I mean, I would have been happy if that had won, because it's just, in terms of a pure naturally commercial, I don't think it's contrived at all. That's why it's really good. It does seem for real, you know, but it is naturally really addictively commercial.
Yeah, it's a good pop record without trying to be a pop record, I think. I think it's just had a good crossover hit from being an underground artist. I mean, I don't know her background, but I mean, is it Lights On, I think, is the track?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was Katie B. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a good track, and then when I heard it on the record, it kind of made sense with the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's nice about it as a pop record is it doesn't feel like it's been focus grouped into existence.
No.
It doesn't feel like a bunch of suits have sat around at a record company going, what will appeal to these mysterious young people, you know, which is nice.
There's an effervescence to it, isn't there? Almost like you can hear the enjoyment she's doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's a thing. But ultimately, it was Rusty.
I'd say, and it's Rusty isn't void of any emotion just because it's mainly instrumental or anything. And because it's so, maybe a lot of people would say that it's so now and it's so up to date, but it actually references a lot, you know, previously.
Nick said it made him feel much against his will, euphoric. Yeah. was that similar for you?
Yeah, I don't generally like to be made to feel happy when I'm listening to music.
Oh, you miserable sod, what's wrong with you?
And I guess that's why Woo Life, I was tempted by Woo Life, and the artwork for the Woo Life album is great. I mean, that shouldn't mean anything, but it does.
It comes back to the episode about it being the whole package.
Yeah, you know? Totally. And it's a good name, good titles, and the lyrics are good, and it's a good band. And I'd like to hear more from Woo Life, actually. I actually enjoyed every record that we had to choose from.
That is the good thing. That was something we said at the end of... It sounds like you're making this up when you say it, but it is quite good. In a year that a lot of people said, well, there wasn't much good music this year, and certainly wasn't much good new music, and there wasn't much good new British music. Actually, all those records that were on the list had something to commend them with, you know, I thought. And I thought the act of actually sitting down and being forced to listen to something and take it into, you know, which I suppose I do every week, as I get paid to do.
Well, I think I bought 4 or 5 of them. Mm-hmm. If I remember rightly, Wool Life Vaccines, KEB for the Kids. I bought James Blake Against My Better Judgment, and one other I can't quite remember. Mm-hmm. But the 5 I was kind of given to listen to, you know, subtract I really came round to. Mm-hmm. There were some really nice lyrics with Jamie Woon. As you get older, you do get a bit lazy in your listening practices. You tend to hold on to the things that meant a lot to you. Mm-hmm. You know, when you were younger, it's just, that's the natural thing, but, you know, it's always good to... I have deeply engaged in this process, as you saw by my notes.
I was going to say, sheaves of notes. You both a bit have deeply engaged in this process, which I'm
very happy, but I'm also very shocked that Rusty's actually won. Mm. I think it was... it was close. And they're all good albums in their own way, and KEB and Woo Life, it could have easily been either of those.
Yeah, no, absolutely, that's really true. I'm gonna wind this discussion up now because Nick is once again about to convince us all that Woo Life should have won. thank you both very much for coming in.
Cheers, Alexis.
Thanks very much. Thanks.
Nicky Wire there, still valiantly waving the flag for Woo Life. What did you think of Rusty Kieran?
I've seen him live a few times, and yeah, it's always been brilliant.
In what sense is it brilliant? It doesn't strike me as the kind of music that would be amazing live.
Well, that's what I first thought when I went, because I thought it was definitely more the kind of crowd that's a little bit more technically aware, perhaps a little bit more niche. But actually, you know, it has that kind of transcendental quality, which I think you can really enjoy it. You know, the kind of the crew that hang around, you know, the decks or whatever.
Right, yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
They
yeah,
really
yeah.
like it, but I also really liked it coming from a place of just kind of wanting to hear interesting sounds and beats and samples, and yeah, he did it really, really well.
Were people dancing? Were people, like, sort of into it in that way? Because that's the sort of thing... I mean, one of the things I really like about the Rusty album is it sounds like... On one level, it's on Warp. It's kind of very cleverly put together. Derwin had a lot to say about the way it was produced and the kind of sounds he was using and all that kind of thing from a very production. But the thing that Nick from the Manics said, he goes, "Oh, you know, he liked it because it made him want to go out, take drugs, and dance." And he said, "And I ate doing all those three things." And there is something quite partyish and uppish about it. And
definitely.
It would be a shame if it was like sort of a nerdy chin stroke crowd. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's all well and good to, you know, to kind of listen to it or talk to studio heads that are, you know, deconstructing Ableton or whatever, and you know, and I think that's great. But if it, you know, if it doesn't transcend that, if it doesn't make people dance in the club, then I always consider it as, you know, a failed record. It's, you know, and when I've been out, people have been dancing to it, definitely.
Wicked. I hope it gets more coverage. I discovered that it only sold 3,000 copies last year, which is not very much. I hope, you know, if the Guardian First Album Award does something, maybe it'll encourage more people to go out and buy it. Charlotte,
I came to that record massively after the initial kind of hype around it, and I had no idea what to expect from it, but I loved it. I really loved it. I also really like the album cover.
Oh, yeah. Really? There was some discussion about the album cover, because it looks like a prog rock album or something.
Which is why I love it.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I don't know, it kind of makes me think of the Dark Crystal film.
Oh, yeah.
with all the, you know, all the crystals.
With David Bowie, is it?
Yes.
Oh, no, that's Labyrinth.
No, that's Labyrinth. Yeah. But they're both Jim Henson films.
Yep.
Wow, there you go. Well, wow, amazing. There you go. So, yeah, the Rusty album, I think it's brilliant, Glass Swords. Well worth checking out if you haven't already. That brings us to the end of this week's podcast. I would like to thank our guests this week. Thank you very much, Kieran.
Thank you.
Pleasure as ever. And thank you very much, Charlotte. Do come back.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much for listening. The show was produced this week by Simon Barnard. I'm Alexis Petridis. Join us again next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.